Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
In this week's episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast, we talk about the retirement of Texas Tech Chancellor Robert Duncan. Talk about some Texas Tech news, especially football news coming from the scrimmage. We continue our preseason previews and predictions for games 7 through 12. And in a mailbag edition, we talk about some updated quarterback starting odds, cord cutters, corner, and what we learned. The 23 Personnel Podcast starts right now. You are listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael. Welcome back to another week of the 23 Personnel Podcast, where despite our best efforts, we still get screwed over by A&M. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by Michael.
Hello, everybody.
This may be an episode, if you have children listening, that you need to pull out the earmuffs.
We might have to mute a little. I have to say I'm on a bit of a sugar rush because Spencer brought a Big Red over here, and I've already drank the entire thing, so I'm loaded. I'm loaded to the gills.
I'm pacing myself with my Diet Dr. Pepper, and your Big Red is long gone.
It's gone. It's way gone.
So, we are recording, obviously, on Tuesday night. News broke this afternoon following the surprise retirement of Texas Tech Chancellor Robert Duncan that maybe there was some interference or some sway from South Texas to get Mr. Duncan to retire.
Yes. There's on Chad Hastie's show this morning, who, full disclosure, we are friends, so I do like Chad, and I show some favoritism there.
And he does interact with us like on the regular.
Sure, yeah.
Which is cool because he's a legit radio host.
He is.
And we're just some schmoes with a podcast.
Yeah, we're just guys sitting at what is this? 23 Personnel HQ North.
Yes,
we're back at HQ North this
back
week.
At HQ North, HQ South will be maybe next week. For the draft, which I'm excited about, man.
Yeah, me too. But Chad mentioned this morning on the show, well before the big news hit, he had some pretty strong words for the Board of Regents, and I think he had kind of inklings or hints that they could have been the ones to have enforced this decision, and that if it is them, that they should step forward and say why or what their reasonings were. And so later on, Jay Leeson on Twitter, who's sometimes
he's a host of an A&M. Sorry, A.M. Texas politics talk show.
Yeah, the other side of Texas.
Yeah, other side of Texas. He's been a Texas Tech athletics fan for a while. He and I actually were Twitter followers and Twitter buds back like 6 or 7 years ago.
And if you guys saw the article in the Dallas Morning News a while back about Tech getting the vet school and how it was kind of a, you know, it was an opinion piece, but it was about how A&M and Tech are butting heads a little bit. Jay Leeson, he had his name on that article. So he's tweeted out some stuff. He gets some stuff from Rager Dykes. He likes to tweet those out.
He's been riding that wave
right
last week and a half or so.
And there's been, you know, he had one tweet that wasn't completely accurate. He had information claiming that I forgot how many banks were going to file a suit on Rager Dykes, but that didn't actually come through. But anyway, I think all that to say, I think what he's tweeted this afternoon when stuff really hit the fan at about 5 was that he was told. I'll just read the tweet verbatim. He said, "I'm told by very credible sources that Secretary Perry, that's Rick Perry, conducted effort to oust Duncan on behalf of A&M's John Sharp. 4 of the 5 and he's talking about the regents, were then Governor Rick Perry appointees, Francis Hammonds, Stymonds, and Long. The fifth, Huckabee, was appointed to another position by Perry. So he's...
And lest we forget that Rick Perry is an A&M Aggie.
Oh, yeah. Diehard through and through. So if that's true, if there was some sort of... I don't want to say conspiracy, but a form of... I can't... Just unethical... Wheeling and dealing behind the scenes to get someone out so that they wouldn't have a competing vet school, then I don't know what to think of that aside from what Chad was talking about earlier. If this is not the case, or even if it is the case, the Board of Regents should state their opinion, state their why they voted the way they did, and we should call for their resignation if they're doing things that are not for the good of Texas Tech University and for political reasons. And people keep bringing up, well, what is their leverage? What are they going to get in return? And I don't know.
What does Rick Perry have on these five men?
That's a good point.
Because...
Or does he have some cush federal job or federal appointee position that he could give them that would elevate where they are right now? I don't understand
we're
motivation aside from just... loyalty to A&M or some sort of reward that we're unaware of at this point.
Yeah, so we're obviously drawing the extension of this that without Robert Duncan, Texas Tech will either stop or falter in their efforts to open a vet school.
Right.
And that because of these five Board of Regents that they were able to remove Duncan, and that I guess would they have say in the next person, I would assume?
I would guess so. I would assume it would have to be approved by the Board of Regents. But that's just...
They've obviously sent a message that they, for some reason, don't want Texas Tech to pursue a veterinary school.
Yes. If all these reports are true, that seems to be exactly what they're indicating. And the only way to get them out is to petition the governor, I think.
Yeah, and
they're appointed by the governor.
If you've got five of your nine regents acting to the detriment of the university, like, they've got to go.
Yes.
I don't know how we, as Texas Tech fans or even just alum, like you throw the sports out of this. You know, I love my university far more than I love Texas Tech sports.
Mm-hmm.
Shocker, maybe. But no, I mean, like these guys, they're trying to influence the future of this university because Rick Perry has some kind of influence over them. It's frustrating, maddening. They are embarrassing themselves. They're embarrassing the university. When this came out this afternoon, I was working on putting some furniture together in our soon to be guest room. And like, so there were some things that I was having a problem with actually putting the furniture together, but like I was screaming at the furniture because.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
because I was also fuming mad about what was happening with this. Because it was strange that we heard of Duncan's retirement announcement the week before school starts. Like, that's not a time for a chancellor to be retiring.
Well, not only that, but and he gave 2 weeks. It was basically a two-week notice, just like you're leaving your, you know, you worked as a claims adjuster at an insurance agency, and you're just turning in your 2 weeks.
And he's not that old.
No.
He's not, like, retiring for health reasons. He's not, like you said, he gave 2 weeks. Not like, I'm going to finish out this upcoming school year, help find the replacement, and then move on. No, he's like, I'm out in 2 weeks, which sounds like either something serious had come up
that
we don't know about.
Right.
Or these five men were kind of pushed to kind of push Duncan to retirement, force him out.
Well, and that was a couple of other things that surfaced, which I don't even want to repeat who said them, but there were some other rumors about misappropriating funds or something like that. And I don't think anybody believed that for a second, especially Tech alumni or people even who's interacted with Robert Duncan. I don't think anybody really believed that, and it's unfortunate that that even came out, but it reeks of just some sort of ousting that means that he was forced out before he was ready. He's forced out before Tech is ready. I mean, Tech's got to find a new chancellor. Tech has to scramble now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, this is not something that... It's not that there was some kind of just like inappropriate behavior on his part that later turned like he was found with a student.
Or
nothing like that at all. Where it's just like kind of hush-hush for me to kind of move him out of his position. Like he, until this afternoon, looked like he was stepping down on his own accord.
Right.
I just, to think that A&M through Rick Perry has say over what the Texas Tech Board of Regents does is infuriating.
Yep.
Because one, they are the biggest whiners on the planet. They run away from any competition, obviously, because they refuse to play any Big 12 schools. Bringing it back to sports, they will dodge us in bowl games when it's their draw for a Big 12 bowl game. Which is how we ended up playing LSU a couple years ago. A 9-3 LSU team playing a 7-5 Texas Tech team. That was not the matchup that should have happened.
Oh, no.
No, it should have been a 6-6 A&M or a 7-5 A&M versus a 7-5 Texas Tech.
Yeah, that was because SEC gets to decide.
They whined to the conference and said, no, we don't want to do that. And so they got the bowl alignment changed and got LSU in there and... Anyways, they have shown their willingness to duck us on the playing field. Now they're trying to avoid any kind of competition in terms of school and providing those resources to the rest of the state. And it's not just hurting Texas Tech. This is hurting the industry and those students across this area, this region. Not West Texas, but like the southern United States, looking to get into a vet school. A&M's overloaded. There's only a handful of other schools.
Yeah, I think there's one in...
There's one in Colorado.
And I think Oklahoma State might have one. Or there's one in the state of Oklahoma for sure. But I'm not sure if New Mexico has one. I would doubt that they do.
I don't think they do.
So you would get, I would imagine, a lot of folks from New Mexico, and there's a lot of ranchers in New Mexico and a lot of cattle out there, depending on where you are. So I do think it's more than just, hey, we're trying to put our foot down and make a name. We're Tech is trying to meet a need and
A&M's.
Finding someone. Yeah. And A&M's, I kind of think it comes down to money, even though A&M has more money than some small countries probably. So I don't
see how they'd be worried about money since they're getting some of the public, what's that, the PUS?
The Permanent University Fund, yeah.
Which is given to Texas State schools, but somehow Texas Tech is not on that receiving. It's actually just...
It's A&M and UT, and that's it.
Yeah, and they're sharing like billions of dollars from...
Oil industry. Tons of it.
Here in the Permian Basin that they're just... Yeah.
It irks me at... you know, at, I don't think I'm releasing classified information, but at work, what I do for work is somewhat in the energy business, and a lot of the land we deal with has University of Texas system written all over it, and it just always irks me knowing that all this infrastructure and all this stuff is going in and they're getting all this money for it, and we're not seeing a dime, even though it's in our backyard and people live in Lubbock because they can't find a house in Midland, yet Texas Tech gets no direct benefit from oil found in the Permian Basin or Delaware Basin or any of that.
So we actually were able to get through that topic without any profanity. So
we made it.
No earmuffs required, no explicit content tag required for this episode. Let's move on to some Texas Tech athletics related news.
Yes.
It was announced, when was this? Last week, like on Friday, I think. Texas Tech announced some contract extensions for some coaches, namely Tim Tadlock. I'm going to blank on their first names. Tom Petty. Richard Petty.
Todd Petty.
Todd Petty. I don't know, man. Sands and Wes Kitley.
Yeah, Greg Sands.
Greg Sands. So, the details on the Tadlock contract is now 7-year, $7 million agreement going through 2025. So he's going to be making right around $1 million a year. In terms of baseball coaches, that's...
Is that up there?
It's way up there.
Great, good. I mean, he deserves it, every bit of it.
And I think the compensation for the other four also puts them towards the top of their categories, kind of moving them into the untouchable realm, or just makes it really difficult for another school to come get them. I guess I'm just really excited for these guys. We're excited that Texas Tech was able to nail them down. I think there's one more guy I think I'd like to see added on that list is Tom Stone.
Okay, yeah.
Women's soccer coach, because he's done some fantastic things with that program.
He has. And what I like are the length of the contracts. Maybe I'm used to seeing football or, you know, football teams besides teams based out of College Station sign contracts with their coaches for like 3 years. You know, 5 years is long. But, yeah, Tadlock signed a 7-year contract. Kitley signed 5. Greg Sands signed 6. And Todd Petty signed 5. So that's good to see those lengths. It's also nice to know that, you know, if you're in Lubbock, Texas, and you're making $325,000 a year like Wes Kitley is, you're going to be doing all right. You're going to be having a pretty good setup there for you and your family. So I hope that these guys can stick around as long as they're allotted on their contract. And, you know, the Board of Regents okayed that.
Surprisingly, they weren't trying to screw the university there.
They were waiting.
A-holes.
They were picking their moment. But it's good to have some levity there on many of the coaching situations here.
So, 15 minutes in, let's talk some football, right?
I'm ready.
All right.
Knuckle Badger football. All right. I've got the...
I brought the Dave Campbell's Texas football.
I totally derailed Spencer. I know he was ready to talk Tech football, but I'm gonna go into the Knuckle Badgers Class 3A Division... No. Yeah, Division 2, District 4, 3A, D2. Let's see. Knuckle is picked second.
Ooh.
Second behind Cisco. And Cisco, last year... They were 5-0 in district and 9-3 overall. So that's pretty tough to follow. Merkel last year, they were 7-6 and finished 2-3 in district. So they see a lot of potential, especially in Jonah White, who is the preseason offensive MVP. And I'm pretty excited about the Badgers. I don't think I'm going to catch a game this year. I may not make it, but I've been wanting to read that since 2 weeks ago when I first knew it existed.
If we're going to talk about your high school, give me a second to look at mine.
I'm just glad they're 3A again. They were 2A there for a while.
I have to wait.
They've changed the classifications, or some people have moved in. I don't know. But we were always on the cusp, right there at the top or the bottom of whichever classification it was that we were in.
Excuse me while I wade through the many, many 6A schools to get to mine.
Yeah, he's slowly turning the text.
Here we go.
6A.
Mesquite Horn, which you will know that Horn was obviously the home of Jakeem Grant.
Yeah.
Some other players ended up at Oklahoma. Blank on their names, doesn't matter. Mesquite Horn Jaguars. Player to watch, quarterback Jermaine Givens. I have no idea who these people are.
What do you mean? How do you not know?
2018 known, the offense should remain explosive with district offensive MVP Givens, who threw 29 touchdown passes and ran for 20 more touchdowns. Dang, dude. 49 touchdowns.
Man, y'all got a lot more words than we did.
We got like a whole half page over here, man.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
I just got like a blurb. There was more than what I read, obviously, but I'm just looking at the length of the paragraph here for the 6A. Yeah, gosh, just everything. All you big schools, man, y'all just always thought y'all were better than everybody. Everybody writes more about you.
Better believe it.
Build big stadiums and whatnot. Y'all aren't as cool as you think you are, big and bad.
So we're in the district with Longview, the Lobos of Longview.
Oh, man. How far is Longview from DFW? That's a pretty good drive.
It's an hour and a half drive.
Hour and a half, that's all?
Mm-hmm. It's quick. It's 20.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay.
Because Mesquite Horn is right off of 20.
Longview from here is a while. I was trying to do the subtraction from here to Dallas.
So, in terms of prediction for the district, Longview's picked first. Rockwall, the Yellow Jackets of Rockwall picked second. Mesquite Horn third. The Tyler Lee Red Raiders picked fourth. Top four teams will go to the playoffs. 5, Rockwall Heath. 6, the Mesquite Skeeters.
That's still great.
It's a good mascot.
That's a good mascot.
And then my first high school I went to, North Mesquite Stallions, picked 7th. I transferred within the district, so I had some weird rivalries going on there.
Yeah, that
obviously
is.
The biggest rival was going to be with Mesquite. The North Mesquite game was always a big deal.
Yeah, I bet it would be. Well, Anyways, the takeaway here is that your school was picked 3rd, mine was picked 2nd.
That's the takeaway. Floor with your entire district, dude.
That's not up for debate. That's not how this works.
All right.
Okay, we'll talk Tech football now. Sorry.
Yes, please. So the first scrimmage of the fall camp was this past weekend. Had some news and notes come out of that. I think the biggest one we heard was Octavius Morgan was injured. No official word has been released, but it looks like he will be out for at least significant time, if not the entire season.
Yeah, if you can go by what was posted on Twitter by some teammates, then yes, it seems like an extensive time away from the game. What were they saying? You were telling
me
about
that
before we
started.
They were
dedicating the season to him.
Yes. That's not what you want to hear.
What you say when you roll an ankle.
No. Yeah, when you've got turf toe, you don't have the season named after you. So this not the best news for sure. But Tech did get an interesting bit of info just today on the recruiting front.
This afternoon.
Well, not recruiting, I guess. Maybe.
Yeah, he was probably recruited.
Yeah, I'm sure he was recruited.
Texas defensive back John Bonney. He's a redshirt senior. Graduated in December, is transferring to Texas Tech. Really odd timing that he's going to be joining the team in the middle of fall camp, but he'll be eligible this year. Bonney himself did play. He started 2 games last year. He started 15 games in his career, played in 37. I think he played in all the games last season. He was a 4-star recruit coming out of high school. Every picture I see is of him playing against Texas Tech, and this picture was here in Lubbock breaking up a pass against Derek Willis.
I just want to know, with him being, he's a grad transfer, you said, right?
Yes, and he will be, I can't remember if he's a safety. I think he might be a safety.
I wonder if this has been in the works or not, but classes start 2 weeks from today.
Yes, because My mom is coming to town this weekend to celebrate our son's fourth birthday.
4 years, you did
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he'll be four tomorrow, actually. She kind of mentioned, like, why did you pick the weekend of, like, move-in, like, dorm move-in for this party? I was like, that had no bearing. I was planning a four-year-old birthday party. So dorm move-in is this weekend.
That would go back to, like, 6 years ago of decisions.
Or maybe, yeah. So, I think they always moved you in about a week ahead of time, so... it'll be about a week and a half before classes start if they move in this weekend. So he'll have 10 days maybe to get settled and to start grad school.
Well,
out
just
here.
To get registered and everything. I don't know how that works. Registering seems so daunting to me back in the day. Maybe it's not as complicated as it was. Or if it's grad school, maybe it's not that big a deal. But transferring all your stuff and getting all your transcripts in order and getting everything moved, man, that's... 2 weeks is going to go by pretty quick.
Other interesting thing, so he can play both corner and safety, so maybe this will help with the Octavius Morgan injury.
Right.
Other interesting note, Clay Jennings, who is on the Texas Tech staff, was Bonnie's position coach at Texas.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
There is some familiarity there.
Might have been a connection, too.
Maybe helped. So he will be joining... the Texas Tech Red Raiders roster here pretty quickly.
Yeah, we'll take a 4-star no matter what year, how much eligibility they have left. that's always great.
Yeah, I mean, as a senior too, so he's got some experience, that 4-star base, as I would like to think of it.
I don't want to look too much into it, but it's really promising to see a guy who was probably highly recruited out of high school, who probably didn't play quite as much as he wanted to.
But still quite a bit.
In Austin, but still a lot. Who
And for defense.
Who
Texas.
Sees what Texas Tech is doing and wants to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what the situation, maybe there was something going on at Texas that he either didn't like or
maybe
didn't want to be involved with, or maybe Herman just wanted him gone, anything like that. But just on the surface, it bodes well for Tech to see guys want to come here and want to play their last year of college here.
Absolutely.
And we've seen a couple do that, but definitely not this late in the game and
or this caliber
or on defense, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah,
that receiver from it Oregon?
Yes, Oregon State.
Oregon State.
Seth Collins, he's actually been making some news for himself, making a name for himself.
Right. You see offense do that. You see offensive players come here. Mm-hmm.
Kingsbury mentioned. See, he did make some plays in the scrimmage, saying he's still learning the offense. I think he's going to be playing inside receiver, which is interesting because he's kind of a big guy.
Yeah, was he 6'1"? No, maybe 5'. Dang it, I don't know.
He's on the bigger side of the prototypical Texas Tech inside receiver.
Yeah. Well, what was his?
Seth Collins. This is not boding. So we were talking about doing a roster quiz for Michael, and he didn't study.
Yeah, I even brought it up. It was my idea to tell Spencer, like, hey, just quiz me on any position group. It'll be great for the podcast. And then I printed off the roster last week, and I didn't study at all. So it would be really terrible for the podcast if this is what happened right now.
So I was still gonna try to quiz him, and I was like, you know what? He didn't study. I'll start off easy. Start with one of the easier position groups, like a skill position. My first thought was receiver, and he balked at that. And then I said, okay, just do the quarterbacks. This is before we started. He named three.
Yeah, I named three. That's pretty good.
Which is not.
That's all right.
So there's Colt Garrett, one of the guys you didn't get.
Oh, that's a great name.
Yeah, and then this. See, when I said I would take a reference, because I don't know this guy's name either, the guy that played at Levelland.
Oh, I remember him being recruited. All right, let's see. I've got the roster here, guys. It's great radio.
Good thing I'm not on the radio.
All right, we've got Nick Gerber. That's
Nick
him.
Nick Gerber. There it is. So there's five.
And Caleb Griffin.
Six
from Keller.
I knew there were six.
Yeah, you were right. You knew exactly how many there were. I did not. Oh yeah. Nick Gerber, I forgot. He also went to Tyler JC.
Yeah.
After McLean did. McLean, right. First name basis. Carter. After Carter did.
So no news on a starting quarterback being picked just yet. I don't think he's even Kingsbury's even come out and said how that's going to happen. Like if he's going to dwindle down from three players competing to two, and if he's even going to announce that that happens. I'm sure if it goes from three players to two, that the media will be able to pick up on who's getting the reps with what team,
right?
Pretty quickly. So still got time to figure that out. But let's get on to the rest of our preseason previews and predictions.
I know.
Game 7.
We may have to roll pretty quick. It's already been 30 minutes. We haven't even gotten to the meat.
I know.
To the meat of the podcast.
Game 7 in Lubbock, October 20th. Time to be TBA, to be announced, to be determined. Kansas Jayhawks.
I like our chances.
I do too.
I like our chances quite a bit. Last year, the S&P had them ranked 127th on offense.
Okay, so this is a Doug Meacham offense, like coordinated offense. This is a guy that was at Houston, at Oklahoma State, at TCU, and they had just about the worst offense in the country. This
yeah.
is Texas Tech defense bad of like 2014, 2015.
Right. That's why I'm kind of laughing because I know how it feels to be on the other side of that.
Surprisingly, their defense was better. At 104th.
104th. Not bad. And Connolly, I think he even mentioned on his deal, he said something about the front five, or what did he say?
It was the front six.
The front six. And he said something about them. He was like, don't be surprised if they do pretty well this year.
So, one, the title from the Bill Connolly preview of the Kansas Jayhawks is, well, Kansas will give football another shot.
Yep. It's perfect.
But I think that their S&P rating is bolstered a little bit by they had some surprisingly high what do they call it? Disruptive plays.
Oh, okay.
Tackles for loss, sacks, that kind of thing.
Deflections.
Yeah, so that kind of raised up their defensive profile. Their efficiency is at 95th, explosiveness 115th, which means they're giving a lot of big plays. Field position 130th. I've never seen it that low, which means they're defending short fields, and finishing drives 115th means they're not stopping anybody from scoring.
Yeah.
So you will host the Jayhawks. This is not going to be their year to get you. Beatty, unfortunately, maybe his last year at Kansas, not really his fault. He was left with a dumpster fire after the previous two coaches didn't really seem to care. Or three, I can't remember. So it was Beatty. Who's like directly before him?
Was it when was Mangini?
Oh, that was like 2007-08, and then it was Turner Gill, who went off to like Buffalo, and he was awful. And now it was Charlie Weiss.
Charlie Weiss.
He was awful, surprisingly, and they're still paying him, which is
oh my gosh, them, are they really?
Them and Notre Dame, dude. Charlie Weiss is banking. He hasn't worked in like 3 or 4 years, making like $10 million.
That's incredible.
And then they've got Beatty, who has actually worked with Kingsbury. He was on the offensive staff of Kingsbury at A&M. I think he was a wide receivers coach. Just, you know, for their sake, I don't think I would fire Beatty this year, but, I mean...
I don't think I would either. I don't know...
Because, one, who are you going to get?
Right.
And he's actually done really well in recruiting. They picked up like a potential five-star player at one point. You're like, what is happening?
Well, and like I was trying to say earlier, and then I completely biffed on it. Connolly said, he said, you know, as far as the defense is concerned, he said that the secondary imploded, but a load of JUCOs could increase competition in the back. If that happens, the front six could be one of Big 12's best. And then he says, no, seriously.
Yeah, so that, and then Seth actually pointed out, they have a all Big 12 caliber linebacker, maybe not like a Dakota Allen, Jordan Brooks, but maybe like second team or like Big 12 honorable mention.
Right.
And Joe Dineen, he's a big dude, 6'2", 235.
Yes.
He would be one of their key players. I would go with Khalil Herbert or just any of their running backs. One of their big recruits is a running back. He's a four-star guy. And then, like, they have one receiver that they're going to go to is Steven Sims, and he was pretty good.
Well, if they could get to where they can run the ball a little bit, that might help them stay in some games or take, get a little bit further down the field.
So
maybe they could return the ball some on special teams. I don't know. I like our chances.
I was going to say, I don't think there's any surprise here that I'm marking this one down as a win.
Me too.
So that'll put Texas Tech, at least for me, at 5-2 after 7 games.
Yep, we're identical so far.
Game 8. This one's tricky. You travel to Ames, Iowa to face the Fighting Matt Campbells.
Oh, man.
Have not lost to your Texas Tech Red Raiders since Matt Campbell had gotten there.
Yeah,
and it's been two very, very ugly games. You lost by 56 points. One, the first time they played them up in Ames, 66-10. It was not even like the same team. This was a Patrick Mahomes-led offense, and you scored 10 points. You just looked out of sorts from the get-go. Last season, same type of thing at home. You couldn't move the ball against them. They figured you out on defense, it seems. And then that kind of spread to the rest of the conference. I think that they're starting to pick up on that they're you can have success if you drop 5 or 6 guys into coverage, starting with 3 safeties deep. So they're going into kind of like a cover 3, then like flooding the middle of the field with linebackers and corners.
Hmm.
So you have a hard time going deep on 3 safeties, have a hard time going underneath with, you know, another 4 or 5 guys in coverage there. You would hope you'd be able to run the ball against a 3-man front, especially if you've got all those guys in coverage, but you weren't able to do that last year. Hopefully you'll be able to do that a little bit better this year, but you are going on the road.
Weird things happen in Ames.
So, speaking of their defense, last season, S&P Plus rating ranking of 31st in the country. That's one of the best in the conference.
That's salty.
That's pretty salty.
That's not bad.
Efficiency 53rd, explosiveness 53rd. Field position 27th, meaning they're going to make you drive the length of the field. Finishing drives 37th, which means they're going to make you drive the length of the field, and they're doing a really good job of keeping you from scoring.
Mm-hmm.
Offense, not so good. 71st for their S&P Plus overall ranking. Really, I don't, you know, they've got their running back, David Montgomery. Still got Alan Hazard somehow. Right?
I think.
Or is he gone?
I don't know. Shoot, he may be gone. Said that.
And then their quarterback, Kyle Kemp, you know, they haven't had a quarterback play the entire season. I think in... So I'm trying to pull this stat from the Solid Verbal podcast where they did the Big 12 preview. It's been like a decade since they've had one quarterback play the entire season.
Wow. Well, I don't think we're going to have... I don't think things are going to go our way. I do think Matt Campbell's done a great job. But this is going to be my... Not that it matters what I think. But this is going to be my kind of evaluation year of how great he's done. Was last year... I don't think last year was definitely completely blind luck. I don't think that at all. I think he had some things fall in place the right way. And you just went through... why his defense was so successful, and he had the guys
to
do it.
Go into Norman,
no
blind luck, and beat a Baker
and
Mayfield.
And beat the Heisman winner, the number one
and
draft pick.
They're so loaded on offense, and they did a good job of stopping them. Just like they stopped you. They flooded the field with zone coverage, and Baker Mayfield just couldn't pick it apart.
Right.
So that's not a fluke. Their defense was pretty stout. We'll be probably just as stout again this year.
Yeah. So with that
going
said,
on the road, so you're not playing them super late in the season, end of October, so it's not going to be like freezing cold.
Right.
You're not playing them in November, like late November, when they've had some success against top ranked teams. But I just right now, at least preseason, Spencer is picking this as a loss.
So am I. I have an L in there right now too.
Until you can prove that you can run the ball and keep drives alive, that you can get around defenses that will just drop back and make you beat them through the air or make you beat them on the ground. You've struggled against this team the past 2 years. It's been really ugly. Again, until you show me otherwise, I'm going to mark this one down as a loss.
Which it kind of stings to do that because, well, for a couple of reasons, but Connolly has him projected in the S&P Plus to go 6-6 this year. And so if that were to actually be true.
But yet still top 50 in the country at 46.
Right. That's also true.
Which means he's still banking on their defense.
Yeah, their defense is going to do well. What I wanted to bring up too is this could possibly be one of, if not the only time Tech has played in Ames to a packed stadium. What is it, Jack Trice Stadium or whatever that is?
Yeah.
If they're doing as well, I mean, there's a lot of buzz at that program. There seem to be quite a bit of empty seats through there whenever I'd watch an Iowa State game, but. You know, that doesn't help our chances either to have a packed stadium up in not a hostile place by any means, but just a place that just hasn't treated us well in a while.
Yeah, so I think Texas Tech's best hope for switching this game, at least going in the future, is if Matt Campbell is not the head coach of Iowa State. Which is weird to say that, like, you know, this guy that came up from Toledo and now he's taken over Iowa State for 2 years, he's had your number. That's sad. Okay, I'm done commiserating.
Yeah,
Iowa State Cyclones with passing
Texas Tech. I'm tired of hearing Matt Campbell praise because that seems to be all. Yeah, everyone ever does is compare him to Kingsbury and
going all back that. To the Adam McClintock preview we talked about last week. He's got Iowa State going 4-8. I think that's absurdly low for them.
I would agree.
So he's also got Texas Tech at 2-10, which I think is low. Baylor at 5-7, that's way too high.
I don't like that at all.
I was listening to the Solid Verbal Big 12 preview. They were all over West Virginia. I was like, do you not realize they have like 70 scholarship players? They're like, they're so deep. I was like, maybe they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they're like me.
Game number 789 on the schedule, November 3rd, in Lubbock versus Oklahoma. This one's interesting because you don't know what they have at quarterback because the situation with Kyler Murray is he's signed that contract to play professional baseball, meaning he's making money this year. He's actually making more money than Lincoln Riley, I think, which is hilarious.
Is that true?
It's either that or he's like really close. It's like he's like in the $4 or $5 million
range. How is the coach? Oh my gosh, I didn't realize he was getting that much dough off the gate.
One of those things where, like, it's very easy to see if he even so much as tweaks a hammy or rolls an ankle or sprains a wrist, even if, like, his non-throwing wrist, he's going to call it quits because he wants to save his health for his professional baseball career because he's already getting paid for that. This is his one shot at football. After this season, he's going to go play baseball. Behind Murray, I don't know what they have in quarterback.
Right, I don't know either, and I think you're right. This is quoting that he will pay him in the neighborhood of $5 million.
That's a lot of money
for a college player. Wow, that seems like such a gray area. How can that be happening?
Well, because
how is that okay?
So Bradley Marquez was paid as a professional baseball player while he was at Texas Tech.
Okay, I don't think I realized that. I knew he was...
I think we mentioned it a while ago, maybe when we mentioned this before, but he was actually, like, Texas Tech did not give... Sorry. Once Marquez signed his professional contract, he was no longer on scholarship at Texas Tech. They were able to use that scholarship with somebody else. He was paying his own way. It was essentially a walk-on for 2 or 3 years, or maybe the entire time he was there. One of the better walk-on receivers Texas Tech
had. Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
But the other thing that gets me, even if they struggle at quarterback, that Rodney Anderson dude at running back is going to tear this conference apart.
Well, they always have solid running backs. And they usually have, I don't know, since 1994. I don't know. And usually more than one. Like a tandem of really solid guys. I forgot what year it was, but we had, I think there were two of them that ran over 100 yards on us, like in 2012. No, something like that. And they just always have solid guys that can really run the football and find the gaps and run over people too. So that's not surprising at all that they've got a successful guy back there. I'm looking up Lincoln Riley's. I've got to look up his salary.
So when you talk about Oklahoma running backs, these are guys that had DeMarco Murray, Quentin Griffin, some guys in the history I don't recognize, Adrian Peterson. Gosh, there's somebody else that you think I would remember because they had a 30 for 30 about him.
Who was it?
Silence. That's not going to help. That's an article about Ronnie Anderson.
Okay, there's actually an article on here that's Lincoln Riley will barely make more than his starting QB in 2018, and this is on College Football Talk. Coach's salary is $4.8 million, and the signing bonus for Kyler Murray was $4.7 million. So just barely. Riley did make... I say only well, in that, quotes. Before he made like bonuses. $2.1 million last year. So
Kingsbury made more than Riley.
Dude,
OU yeah. was like...
Well,
like,
let's see what he have. I think he had 2.8 with... I think it was $2.7 million, and I think he had a $700,000 bonus.
But like, just think about the value OU is getting at paying Lincoln Riley $2 million and got him to the playoff.
Man.
So the guy I was thinking of was Marcus Dupree.
Okay. Back. Oh, yeah. I think I actually watched that 30 for 30.
Dude, it was a good one. I enjoyed
it. Yeah, it was great.
All right. So back to the Oklahoma preview. Defense is going to be solid again. It's one of those games, like, I don't know what it's going to come down to because of your offense, the Texas Tech offense. And the questions that Oklahoma has on offense. That, like I said, they have Ronnie Anderson. They've got receiver CeeDee Lamb, who was really good last year. Their defense has been pretty good. You've had some moderate success, but typically not enough.
Yeah, some more than moderate success against their defense 2 years ago, but of course that didn't end up in a win.
It didn't help.
Anyway.
I mean, I'm gonna mark this down as a loss.
Me too. Man, so we're
trying to stack up the L's here.
We're not doing this. You know, we don't talk about these before we record, but right now, you and I are dead even after 9 games, picking 5-4.
Yep. The very next week, November 10th, also in Lubbock, Texas. You get Oklahoma and Texas back-to-back weeks in Lubbock.
In Lubbock. That was the only thing I liked about that new round robin schedule was because that you would get them in Lubbock back to back. But usually you also get them on the road back to back or something.
So I think the biggest thing that I'm concerned about this year or any year you play Texas, you always seem to be kind of starstruck. They always seem to come in and kind of push you around a little bit. Their defense, again, may be the best in the conference. They're going to be up there with TCU and Iowa State.
And just the most consistent, it seems like. They always – and, you know, to talk about OU's running backs, I know you're talking defense, but Texas always finds some really athletic running backs too.
And they've got good receivers, but, like, their receivers kind of come out of nowhere. They've got that guy from Abilene – Joe is his last name, which is an interesting first name as a last name.
Lorenzo Joe?
Lorenzo Joe, which is, yeah, like his name is backwards.
That's I like that a lot.
And then Lil Jordan Humphrey, another receiver.
Man, great name. Reggie Hemphill Maps.
Yep, Hemphill Maps. What about their running backs? What you got on there?
Hang on, let me scroll. Where are we? Rushing. Trey Watson.
Yeah, so they picked up the Cal transfer, Trey Watson, that you were in on. They just, yeah. I think the biggest question for them on offense is going to be their quarterback. Is it going to be Sam Ellinger? Is it going to be Shane Buechele? Some other guy that comes in and makes them look pedestrian or highlights how pedestrian those two quarterbacks are.
Right, right.
So again, you're back. You're still in Lubbock, playing against one of the best defenses in the conference.
Reeling from a loss against OU.
I'm gonna go with another loss here.
We're winning this thing. I thought this when we did this in May. We're gonna beat Texas, dang it. We're gonna beat Texas in Lubbock for the first time in what, 10 years? It'll be 10 years now.
Well, and so here's the thing. So I'm thinking about it, and I'm kind of maybe talking myself out of it. On the road with a McLean Carter, Nick Chmielewski offense, you were able to beat them.
Right.
Like in Austin.
In Austin. We've won two out of the last three.
The one you put lost, it that way. The one you lost was in Lubbock.
Oh, and it was a heartbreaker too. We should have won that one.
Interception at the end.
Yeah. One of, you know, like Mahomes made probably 100 great plays that day, and then that was one really bad one. But you can't hold it against him because we were in a position to actually win that thing. And man, it was so close. Just pulled away from us. Clutched away at the end. But I think finally the brakes will go Tech's way this year in Lubbock. The Jones will be rocking, as always, for this game. I'm counting on it. W. Marking it down.
W. All right. The very next week, you got a stretch up here. All these games are back to back to back. You have that bye week going into the TCU game, and then obviously you're off that weekend, and then you play Kansas the next weekend. So you kind of get those, like a 10-day break, but around the TCU game.
Right.
And then you're straight through the rest of the season. November 17th in Manhattan, Kansas, Kansas State. So, interesting note here, Bill Snyder's contract was recently extended, given a 5-year extension.
Was it five?
5 years. So, which I think it was more of a move to kind of settle some nerves for the fan base and the recruits. Despite Bill Snyder's age, his health concerns, he will be the coach going forward. Good move on Snyder's part, because I think he's trying to hold out to make sure his son takes over as the head coach, which I think is a bad idea.
He's 78.
78. So his contract will run through. So he'll turn 79 during the season.
Yep.
He will be 84 the time this contract expires if he's still coaching.
That's incredible. More power to him. I hope he is. I hope he's still doing well enough to coach. Because I think I remember reading that. I didn't remember it was that long, but I think he has like a year-to-year deal after that. Is that right?
I'm not that familiar with his contract. I just know they recently extended it. Kind of a big deal for a coach his age, kind of just hanging on.
Yeah.
But it seems like every year...
I mean, not just hanging on. I mean, he's in command of every...
That's what I'm getting. Every year he's on the sideline, he's surprising. He does surprisingly well with the little talent. Well, seemingly less talent than the rest of the conference, and he does 6-6, 7-5 seasons where you're like, well, how are you doing this? And it's because he will grind you to dust.
Yeah.
Their offense is methodical, super boring.
3 yards, 4 yards, seven yards.
They just lull you to sleep, and they'll break like a 10-yard run on you. You're like, oh, no. And they get another first down.
Man, I have to say, I got to see my great aunt this past weekend. And she got to meet my daughter, which was fun. And she's 81 and just as with it. And she can't get around as good as she can anymore just because of health issues. But she can out-talk you. She can out-shop you. Like my mom, she made my mom shop till she dropped. And mom's like 20 years younger than her. And it's just incredible to see octogenarians.
There you go.
Just dominating life. It just gives me hope. I don't know. I really like it. I think it's cool that Snyder signed a contract and that he expects to coach till he's 83, pretty much. I don't think he's the type that would sign a contract if he didn't think he could fulfill it in one form or another. So, you know, hats off to the 80-year-olds out there still running circles around us.
Let's talk
30-somethings.
They're quarterbacks, because that's kind of like where their offensive identity kind of revolves around. Is this guy more of a thrower or a passer? They've got three guys that are...
Thrower or a passer?
Yes. Thrower or a passer? No, a rusher or a thrower. Jesse Ertz, Skylar Thompson, Alex Delton. They all played a little bit last season.
Okay.
Jesse Ertz and Skylar Thompson will run the ball, but they're more of a balanced dual threat, whereas Delton is definitely like, he will throw it like once every 10 plays.
He's gonna take off, yeah, with it if he sees anything.
He's definitely the runner there. Just the thing, like, you historically struggled with running quarterbacks, especially, man, Kansas State, because they just do such a good job of loading the offensive line, and they'll pull, and they'll have a fullback and a running back, and then you just have, usually, they've had, like, just massive quarterbacks. You know, I think of, oh gosh, what's his name? The big quarterback they had a couple years ago.
Was it Jake? Jake somebody?
No.
You sure?
Anyways, they're just really difficult to bring down, and if you did, he always fell forward, and, like, so he got another extra 2 yards at the end of his run, just because he fell forward.
Who was it?
Gosh, you're really...
I'm good at searching.
Are you, though? Because this is not coming up.
What year was it?
There was one in 2010, 2011, where they were like, where Kansas State was like 11-1.
Colin Klein.
There was him. He was a big guy. And the one after him, it may have been a Thompson, but not Skylar Thompson. Either way, usually have really good offensive line play. They have so-so running backs, kind of a deficit receiver. Defense is will slow you down a little bit. They'll make you earn it. But they're definitely more of a team that's going to just run the clock, really reduce your chances, your time of possession, put the pressure on you to be as efficient as possible, because they just will grind the game out. You've had some success against them the past few years, really close to them this past year. Unfortunately, ended up, your defense kind of gave it away there at the end. Kansas State was able to close the gap and take the lead late in the game. You had the chance to tie it. Did it go to overtime?
Yes, it did go to overtime.
It did go to overtime.
People were all over Kingsbury for not... I think we had some time left, and we just played for overtime, I think.
Yes.
Time left in regulation.
Yeah, that's right. But you went on defense first. Kansas State scored a touchdown. You needed a touchdown. Nick Szymanek on fourth down, as we like to say, threw it to shallow water.
Yeah. Yeah.
On a fourth down pass, threw it into the stands, which makes no sense because nobody had a chance to catch it.
Nope. Burns.
While you are going to Manhattan on this game, I am confident that you will win this game.
Oh, Spencer picking the win in Manhattan. I'm picking the L. I'm picking a loss there, and it's not so much on the matchup. Part of it is, a lot of it is really. Snyder just kind of has Tech's number. He's able to, like you pointed out, just kind of beat you to death, but with a pillow. Like, it's just, you don't even know it's happened until it's happened. And then you look up and you realize that, oh, yeah, we lost.
Was that a death by 1,000 cuts?
Uh-huh, yeah. Or all of a sudden you look up and you realize that your offense with your top 10 draft pick didn't score a point for like a quarter and a half in the last half of a game.
While your defense was stopping.
While your defense was playing lights out. So, yeah.
So I will take...
I'm taking an L there. And a lot of the reason I'm taking an L there is because, you know, all of that is factored in, but spoiler alert, I don't think we're an 8-win team. So that's a lot of the reason why I'm taking an L there.
Are you just building in a loss so you don't get to 8 wins?
Well, the UT and Kansas State games were kind of coin flips for me. And so I really want to beat UT, and I think we can in Lubbock this year. So that's where I put the W there, and I put the L on K-State. That was my thought process. So, spoiler alert.
Okay. Let me point you to the statistician, Bill Connolly, here.
Okay, what's Connolly got?
So, for this matchup, he's got, you know, obviously he's got the projected S&P rank for Texas Tech at 47. The projected margin of this game, Kansas State, plus 0.3. Not even a full point.
It's gonna be. I know. It's gonna be kind of like. It's gonna be like last year, but it's gonna be way less. I think it's gonna be like 27-27 or something at the end of regulation or something crazy.
Kansas State win probability of this game, 51%. And this is a team at home. This is a team at home.
It is a coin flip. I get you, man. But I don't want to be that optimistic. I don't want to be that optimistic yet. I can't allow myself to be. I want to be that hopeful, but I'm going to let it play out a little bit more. I don't know if we probably shouldn't revise these. We'll just leave these alone. These will be
no, because we're going to use them to make fun of ourselves later in the
season.
Oh,
well, of course. Because any chance to make fun of ourselves, I'm totally for that. Because
the negative on this side of the table over here, me, Spencer, so far I've got Tech at through 11 games, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 5.
Me too.
Going into the Baylor game.
Yep.
This is coming from somebody like 3 weeks ago said you're going to win 4 games.
Yeah. You've already gone up
in the Kool-Aid. 150%. It's probably the non-conference sweep. I've got you going 3-0 there.
Mm-hmm.
That may not be the case. All right. Game number 12. Possibly the last game of the season, although if our predictions hold true, you still have one more because we're both at 6 wins, at least 6 wins.
Right.
Baylor Bears in Arlington. What do you think of Matt Rhule?
I think he's recruited well. I don't know how. He seems to be who they need right now. But I'm just not.
Is that the Batman reference? He's the hero they need, but not the one they deserve, or something. Whatever that line
is. Yeah, at the end of Dark Knight. I do kind of like him. I think that he's got some good qualities to him.
And, okay, so here's the thing that I think is most interesting. Seth pointed out that like 80 or 85% of teams will have a win-loss variation of plus or two minus games from 1 year to the next.
Right, I remember him doing that.
2017, they were 1-11. Obviously, you can't lose two more games than that. If they were to fall within that statistical category of plus or minus two games, really shouldn't be expected to go better than 3-9, maybe 4-8. A lot of people have them going 5-7 and 6-6. Like, that's a five-game swing on a Baylor team that showed you nothing last year.
Only Matt Campbell's capable of such heroics.
I don't want to talk about that anymore. I'm past Iowa State right now.
Yeah, he's definitely outside of that because I think they won 3 games his first year, and then they won 8 last year. So
did they only win 3 games his first year?
They've only won 11 since he's been there. So I just did the reverse math.
That was good reverse math.
Thank you. I think it's called subtraction.
True. So the quarterback for Baylor Bears, Charlie Brewer. You might recognize that name.
That is a very familiar name.
Brother Michael Brewer was former quarterback for you, Texas Tech Red Raiders, before he injured his back, moved on to Virginia Tech, opened the door for the saga that was Davis Webb versus Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of understand his make as an athlete. A little bit of a running quarterback. Last year he was decent. Obviously not very good if it's 1-11, but I don't think that was
Brewer's fault. He was a true freshman.
Yeah.
Still not sure what to think of the Baylor Rule offense because it's so different from what it used to be. They still have like pieces of their really explosive offense, especially their receivers, guys like Chris Platt. I just saw the name. And Denzel Mims. Those are guys that played for Art Briles and Kendall Briles.
Kendall.
Were really good.
Kendall.
They did pick up the transfer from Tennessee, Jalen Hurd. He was a quarterback for them, then went to receiver. Or maybe he went to running back. Yes. Sorry. He went from quarterback to running back. Now he'll be playing receiver for Baylor.
Wow.
He's a big dude. 6'4", 230.
That's pretty stout.
Also could be a running back, which is at that size, you're like, good night. That's a big dude. I don't see them making a 5-game jump. Going from 111 to 6-6, which means just in that alone, I think Texas Tech will win this game.
Me too.
So I've got Texas Tech going 7-5.
Yep, we both do, but we're flipped game, on UT and K-State.
Yeah, the only games we differ on two games on a 12-game schedule.
You know, this doesn't make for great conflict, I'm sure, for anyone who was wanting that. But that's
we should have picked like exact opposite schedule. Like you picked like a sweep, yeah. I pick a straight three losses.
Talk you into
I can't do three losses with Lamar in there though.
Yeah, and then I talk you into but we're gonna win in Ames and then we're gonna beat OU. Like, just do like the complete opposite.
You picked a loss in Oklahoma State. I would have said we'll win that one. We'll lose West Virginia. We'll you know, you pick a win in Fort Worth. I'll pick a loss.
Yeah. Yeah, we could have done that.
We should have been a little more interesting. So 7-5.
That should be our motto. That should be how we sign off.
Wish we could be a little more interesting.
Thanks for listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast. We should have been a little bit more interesting.
There was actually one of the bumpers on the radio show this afternoon, that listeners, after listening to this show, they would bring their sports IQ just below average.
Hey, there it is.
I was like, dang it, that would have been perfect for ours.
Level playing field.
So yeah, I going into this,
did you see the
preview? Did not expect to be picking a winning season, especially a 7-5. I think, you know, at 7-5, you're probably looking at an extension for Kingsbury because he's, I wouldn't say due one, but like he's getting towards the end of his contract where you would expect a coach to be extended or let go.
Right. If anything, just for the sake of recruiting and for your assistants and to let them know that they're going to be stable around for a while unless Kingsbury decides to let them go. So I wanted to bring up one other thing, the Baylor win probability, to kind of echo what we were looking at Kansas State based on the
S&P
stuff.
I don't want to hear it.
Baylor win probability against Tech is 49%.
Which means Texas Tech has a 51% chance.
Right.
Where I picked the opposite for the Kansas State game, where Texas Tech had the 49% to win over Kansas State.
Yep.
I don't see how this is a such a close toss-up between these two teams.
That boggles my mind. We may be wishing,
and maybe
we hadn't said this in 12 weeks or something, or maybe it's the neutral site. Tech has played, they have not played well in Arlington. I don't know if that has anything to do with S&P rankings. I doubt they take that into effect, but Tech has not played well there.
So, yeah, 7-5, both of us.
Meineke Car Care Gator Bowl game.
If we go 7-5, I mean, we're going to be on the verge of being satisfied with the season.
Yeah,
because you do improve from 6-6. Obviously, winning more games, you're not improving your conference win total. Because I think if you go 3-0 in non-conference, you're still gonna have a losing record in your conference schedule. If you're only finishing at 7-5,
yep,
you're gonna go 4-5. So you're still digging yourself deeper into that hole, especially for Kingsbury's career record versus Big 12 teams.
He's below 500, isn't he?
Yes, and I don't even think it's close, too. He's close to 500
overall. Oh, he's close to 500 overall. That's right. That's the stat I saw. Yeah, you're right. There's no way. It's probably below, like, 300.
One more stat that we keep pointing to, that we've pointed to a lot, especially the past couple seasons. Do you think Tech's and Kingsbury's record will improve in games where they're trailing at halftime this season? Currently, they're like 2-20.
Yeah, the Texas game, and I can't remember the other one.
It was a while ago.
But the Texas game last year was 2. That was the second one.
Win number 2 in year was, is it 5?
Well, he's on a streak.
Yeah.
He's on a streak. He's on a 1-0 streak of being down at halftime and coming back and winning. So I'm going to say yes.
Which also means that we had the lead in the bowl game and lost it.
Oh, man. Is that right?
Well, if your streak comment is right.
I said 1-0.
Yeah, well, then it's...
Well, I don't know if we had the lead in the bowl game.
Well, now we're going to have to look
at
that.
At halftime.
Go on. What were you going to say?
Well, I think he's going to get another one. I think he's going to get another notch in the belt.
Just one?
Well, I thought that was your question, was at least one.
Okay, sure. Which game do you think it's going to be?
Oh, man. You're going to make me pick it?
Okay.
All right, I've got us... Okay, I've got two possibilities right here.
Oh, sorry. You were tied at halftime in the bowl game.
Oh, okay.
10-10.
All right, so see, he's on a 1-0 streak.
And then gave up 21 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that wasn't good. There were a lot of wide-open receivers.
So you go 10 points in the first quarter.
With no coverage. Very soft. Soft as a feather mattress coverage.
I don't know where you're going with this, but 0 points in the second quarter, 14 in the third, 10 in the fourth. So pretty even except for the second quarter. South Florida just like ramped up on you. They went 3 points in the first, 7 in the second, 7 in the third, 21 in the fourth.
Yeah, that's not a good way to end the season.
That's a collapse like we've seen far too often.
I'm thinking, okay, I picked two of them for possibilities for the down at halftime stat. I'm picking Houston. I could see us being down at halftime against Houston. Mm-hmm. And then come back and win. And then West Virginia.
Maybe West Virginia, but definitely not. I don't think it'd be down at half, really, to either one of those teams. It may be tied or you have a small lead. I think your biggest one where you can come back and win where you're down at halftime would be Kansas State.
Well, you see.
Or Ole Miss,
okay.
So those are both teams that I think. One, Kansas State has this innate ability to start the game with the ball and end a half with the ball. Somehow they'll score at the very end. Or they'll score right at the end of the first half and again receive the opening kick in the second half, which is a huge momentum swing.
Where
I feel like that
happened to us all the time last year.
If you're like, say you're down 3 points and you had this last drive, they score a touchdown, you're down 10. Third quarter starts, they score another touchdown, you're down 17. You went from 3 to 17 in 2 drives without you having a chance to get the ball.
Yeah. I felt like a lot of times last year we went down the field and we kicked a field goal that we missed, and then we turned the ball over on downs and then kicked the ball off at, you know, after halftime. It just kind of snowballed. So, yeah, I get what you're saying for sure.
Kind of in regards to that frustrated me last year was all those end of halves, end of games, possessions. You had time and you like just ran it out. Like I want to see you be more risky. I get that. People are like, well, what if you turn the ball over and you give the other team another shot? I get that. But I want to see you be a little more aggressive.
Thanks for joining us on the 27th episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. Be sure to check out the mailbag edition where we talk about how Mike Leach would have done. Would he still be the all-time wins leader if he had to schedule only 3 out of conference games instead of the 4? We got some updated odds on the starting quarterback, an update to Cord Cutter's Corner, and what we learned this week. For Michael, I'm Spencer. Thanks for joining us this week.